Are you ready to dive into a world of captivating stories, laughter, and enlightenment? Look no further than Unfiltered Studios, your gateway to an incredible podcasting experience. Join St. Joe on Nailed It as he explores life's victories, one nail at a time. Petals of Support brings you heartwarming tales that remind us, even in the darkest moments, there's beauty and hope. Get ready to be entertained by the wit and humor of The Sleevey G Show, where interviews are always fascinating. Need a good laugh? Tune in to Refiltered, our comedy podcast that's sure to tickle your funny bone. Discover inner peace and guidance on finding your way, a spiritual podcast that nurtures your soul. Relax your mind and body with Hypno Wellness, your path to a healthier, more balanced life. Love movies? Movie Lovers Unite is your passport to a world of cinematic wonders. Immerse yourself in the magic of storytelling, laughter, and enlightenment as you're taken on a journey through the fascinating realm of movies and television. And don't forget the Stupid History Minute, where we uncover the quirkiest stories of everyday items. Unfiltered Studios is your destination for diverse, engaging content. Subscribe now and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every story finds its voice. Visit unfpod.com today.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show with me. I have a very special guest with me. I have Cisco. It's been a long time since him and I actually did a show together. It's great to have him back on the show after so many years of us being apart. But as soon as he set a scene that I was actually doing an Arnold Schwarzenegger review for Last Action Hero, and plus this is also a Twitter exclusive because people voted on Twitter, so people who have voted on Twitter, they're going to get this Last Action Hero review. And then also too, people voted on YouTube for Terminator, so you guys are going to get a Terminator review towards the end of this month. But anyways, with further ado, let's go on ahead, let's review Last Action Hero. And hey, man, welcome back, man. It's been a while. I'm happy to have you back on here.
Thank you for having me. I mean, always a pleasure to talk about Arnold. You know, I do an action movie podcast at Action Movie Buffs, if anyone's interested in that. And, you know, we've done Predator. We're thinking of doing True Lies this year for the anniversary.
That's going to be so much fun.
We've done a bunch of Arnold. I'm having trouble thinking of off top, but we love Arnold. Over there, and so as soon as you know pose the question of reviewing Arnold, it was a no-brainer for me, so thanks for having me.
No problem. I'm glad that you accepted my invite to this. I had such a great time rewatching this film. I bought this on 4K on the Steelbook. It is such a and I love how the clarity is composed to a VHS tape and stuff like that too, because I've seen this on VHS, I've also owned it on VHS, and I also seen this in the theater. When was the first time you seen this movie?
Yeah, it's a good question. We were talking a little bit before we started recording here about, you know, I have the Blu-ray, which is, you know, I'm not like a huge snob about video quality and stuff like that, but there are older 80s, 90s movies that, like, you know, even on Blu-ray, it's like, this could be better. And I was telling you that I'm jealous because even though Blu-ray was the best it looked at during that time, I can already tell that the 4K can definitely improve on some things as far as like graininess and color and stuff like that. There were some imperfections, but to answer your question though, I think I saw this one a little bit late. Like, you know, of course I saw the classic Arnolds like Terminator, Terminator 2, Commando, you know, all those 80s Total Recall. And for whatever reason, I feel like, and I think to this day, this one's kind of a hidden gem. You know, I think, you know, partially because I don't think it did well when it came out. I think critics kind of didn't give it the love it deserved at the time. I don't think it did well in the box office. We might have to check on that, but
actually it had an $85 million budget and it made $137.3 million.
Okay. All right. So yeah, but I don't know. I feel like because this was kind of a parody of action movies, that it might have been a little too heady for people at the time. And so that might have been because I remember seeing this late, like I said. So maybe when I was like a teenager or in my 20s or something like that. And I just didn't. I was like, this is cool, but I didn't really think anything of it after that. And then having rewatched it for this show today, right. I'm like, man, it was so much fun. You know, all the tropes that the action movie tropes that it's making fun of, and even Arnold making fun of himself. It's just like something that a lot of action stars don't really do. They take themselves very seriously. And I love that. Arnold at the peak of his Arnold's, you know,
rare
persona to do a movie like this. I think it was just a little too ahead of its time for people to really show it the love it does. Like, I feel like if it came out, you know, today, it would be like talked about, like, up there with Arnold's best.
Right.
Yeah.
This movie is still one of my favorites. It's a whole classic, basically, if you think about it. And yeah, it's like this meta kind of feel to it. And at first, when I was seeing it as a kid, I didn't realize it was even meta. All I know was it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, and this kid gets sunk into this world that we love, which is the action world of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I just fell in love with the story. I liked the whole meta idea of it, the parody of it. I snuck into the theater with my grandfather and my mom because we thought I would actually see the whole movie, but nope, I ended up catching it right when the Grim Reaper comes out. But mm-hmm. Then I went on ahead and seen the actual whole film and everything in the theater. They took me out to go see it in its entirety. But for the most part and everything, I definitely enjoy this film. It's actually in my top tier of Arnold films. So let's go on ahead. Let's dive into this. We're going to go scene by scene. So let's do this. And grab your popcorn and flex those muscles because we're diving into Last Action Hero like never before. Get ready for a podcast so hilarious. Even Danny DeVito would chuckle from over the top explosions to Arnold's timeless one-liners. We're discussing it all with a side of laughter. Tune in, buckle up, and let's embark on a comedic journey through action movie madness. So this movie opens up to basically Arnold coming in at the very beginning, and I just love the opening. It's such an Arnold type of thing where you're not sure where it's going, especially about how the camera angle is. If it looks like someone's filming it on a screen inside the movie theater, the way it's actually how it shifts down a little bit, and then you see the car pull up.
The camera angle is very, very weird. Like it's almost kind of cluing you in. Like this is not your average action movie. It kind of reminded me of like Scream. You know, they didn't do it right away, but in I think it's Scream 4, you know, they started doing their openings that were like the movies, stab movies instead of Scream.
Scream,
but
you
don't,
yeah.
But okay. you don't know that at the time, you know that later on. So they're doing the same thing here with Jack Slater, which I just love. Like it's like you said, it's so over the top. You know, like the rooftop, it's like a scene you've seen a million times where just like the way he just comes in, like the chief is like, he's smoking a cigar and the guy tries to get in his way and he just like punches, the, I think he just punches the guy out of the way.
This is the mayor. And he goes, he ends up punching the mayor. He goes, when the mayor's here, tell him they called me. And then he winds up kicking one of the cops in the nuts.
And he flies like 50 feet in the air. Yeah, it's so funny.
Hey, you a farmer?
Yeah.
He has a couple of acres.
The classic Arnold one-liners. And then this is the rooftop scene with the guy in the raincoat, right?
Yeah, with the Ripper, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like got his son. And it's just like that classic scene. He throws a live grenade. Which again, it's like, oh shit, he's about to blow up his son, and then it turns out to be a knife grenade. Like I thought that was just so funny.
Right, because remember, this is when Jack is basically, he goes, okay, Jack, remove all your guns. He takes out every single gun out of his boot. He takes it out of his sock. He ends up taking it out everywhere.
And yeah, then, he has a whole arsenal. Yeah.
Right. And then he throws down the grenade, and Jack, and the Ripper's like, really, Jack? Really? You're really going to sacrifice your own son just to take me down? I highly think so. What are you talking about? It's a live grenade. Yeah, sure, Jack. Sure. He takes and his son, and he goes, so he, Ripper winds up making his son, making Jack's son, pick up the grenade, and then you wind up seeing the knife at the very bottom of it, and he winds up stabbing him, and then that's when Ripper winds up accidentally grabs Jack's son, and he goes down over the building and everything. So
it's a dark, it's pretty dark, that I forgot about that part, but I do like that they put that in there, because it gives Jack Slater, the fictional character, a little more depth, you know, like he's divorced.
Right.
Now he lost his son. And so they kind of established that. And there's a lot of parallels from the beginning to the end. So this whole rooftop scene is going to be repeated again with the new kid, the main character
in
this movie. So I just think, you know, the first time I saw this, I wasn't necessarily getting all the references and getting just how tight the script is, you know, like I just love the script, not just because it's funny and fun, but because like it just knows action movies. It just knows action movies, and it's so smart and how it tells you like these are the tropes, but it's also doing the tropes in a smart and fun in a way that's better than what we usually see from action movies.
Right.
Yeah.
It gives more in depth. Like I said, it's more in depth. It also gives a little bit more character development for characterization. And I guess, like you said, whenever Danny goes over to like Arnold's apartment and everything, and he explains to him things, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. Yeah. But I like the continuity within it. Mm-hmm. And it's like us watching a Jack Slater movie while Danny's also in this movie with him.
Yeah. I like that. You know, just from the design of Arnold in this, I think really stands out from his other roles. Like he's got the leather jacket and the red shirt. He like looks like an action figure that you would buy as a kid. He's got like lighter hair, you know, he's got the snakeskin boots and the big belt buckle and the cigar. And it's just like, you know, Terminator is definitely like his most iconic, you know, action hero role probably, but like, it makes it believable that this fictional character would be an action star and somebody that this little kid looks up to, just like all of us who loved action movies growing up looked up to Arnold, you know, like it's
exactly
perfectly cast. And I think the kid too, like I know we're going to talk about him, but you know, just like in T2, you know, with the kid playing against Arnold, people call him annoying in Terminator 2. And I was reading some reviews that said like this kid is annoying too. And I don't know. I think
I never felt like John Connor was annoying.
Neither. I really, I'm just like, it, to me, it just was like, this is, kids are annoying.
Right.
Me. You know what I mean? Like
right.
Most kids are pretty annoying. So like when you get kids that are like, you know, whiny or, you know, annoying, they're like the comic, right. You know, he calls himself the comic relief at one point. I'm right. Like, that's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to be, you know, his sidekick basically. So, right. I don't agree with those. This is my point. I think both, you know, John Connor and Danny in this movie are both like really well cast.
I think so too. And I don't find Danny annoying. I find him as a fan who gets to be in this thing with Arnold and just being geeking out, just like how we would geek out with Arnold
exactly.
If we were showed up in the back of Slater's car, you know? But I like how Danny's inside the movie theater watching this, and all of a sudden it just goes out of focus, and you realize you're watching a movie along with Danny, and we're the people who's also in the audience who's also complaining about it, the film going out of focus. And I like how he tells Nick, hey, Nick, it's out of focus. And then you have this poor guy that's sitting down in the movie there sleeping.
The homeless guy.
Yeah, the homeless guy is just sleeping. He goes, hey, kid, I'm trying to sleep. He goes, yeah, so is everyone else. And he winds up going out to the lobby, and no one gives a shit. This is like the only kid that is basically there There, and it's all graffiti. This place is run down. It looks like something from The Matrix in a sense about how dungy it actually looks. Because this guy at the snack bar, he's like, he goes over to Danny, goes over to the guy at the
cigarette. Yeah, he's not not paying attention. Yeah, it's right. It's one of those. And I love this period just of history. Not saying that I'd want to live in that type of environment, but just that, like, New York before it got all cleaned up, Giuliani, you know, Disneyfied it and everything like that. It was like rat infested and dirty and with homeless people everywhere. And so whenever I see movies with this, I mean, Joker, it was like the most recent example I can think of that used that time and place of like 70s New York. But I'm not sure. I think it's supposed to be like, you know, 93 there, but they're definitely playing on that that type of aesthetic for the movie, for sure, of like the 70s rundown, you know, where they still had porn theaters, New York.
Right.
And I kind of love that. I kind of, because it sets that, you know, the danger of that place, because like there's, you know, for this, I think it's PG-13, right? This movie.
Right, it's PG-13.
There's moments where it's like, you know, Danny, he has to shoot a gun, and, you know, he gets, I know I'm jumping around everywhere, but
no, that's okay.
Where, you know, someone breaks into his home and handcuffs him to the, you know, the toilet and stuff like that. Like, so it's, they're setting up that the real world is a dangerous place. So then later on in the movie, when, you know, Arnold gets taken into the real world, he has to learn that this is not an action movie. Like, you can die in the real world.
Right.
And bad guys get away with a lot in the real world. So I just like that. I like that they set the environment up where this is a place where you believe that villains and bad people are running around everywhere. Yeah,
exactly. And that's something that I really liked, how they established different rules for the different roles that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I definitely like that. And then, of course, you know, you were mentioning how, you know, the world is a dangerous place in New York City. And I believe that for the movie theater, for Danny, is like his safest place that he can go to whenever the world is so dark around him. So I definitely like that idea of that's his sanctuary. And he gets to see Nick.
It's, you know, you can tell that this is kid. He's skipping school. You can tell he's not a good student. He has a single mom, and they show her like working late. So you know, you kind of get a feel that he's a latchkey kid. He doesn't have a father figure. So it makes sense that he would look up to like Arnold, this action hero, Jack Slater, as like a father figure. Even before that, this old man that's working in the theater.
Yeah, Nick.
That relationship can be creepy, you know, on like first watch, but then again, you sort of get the feel that, okay, this guy knows that this kid loves movies, and he is just using his job to hook this kid up, basically, and watch over him so that he's not out there in the dangerous world. He's in a safe place, like you're saying. So I kind of like that, even though he's with adults a lot of the time, that he can hold his own and that the adults kind of take care of him. You know, I think that's important.
That's what I like though too. And I like how he goes up to Nick, goes, "Hey Nick, the film's out of focus." And then he's talking about, "Hey, you're going to go see the new Jack Slater movie?" He goes, "Hell yeah, I am," basically. So he's like, "Well, be here at 7 tonight and you get a private screening of it." And he goes, "All right, I can't wait." And then all of a sudden he goes, "Well, you better get your ass to school because you're about 30, 40 minutes late." Next thing you know it, you have the teacher teaching Hamlet and about Shakespeare. And I love this scene, man, so much.
One of the best scenes in the movie. I know you're going to say, yeah.
Oh, my God. If they taught Hamlet the way that they did this for Arnold, I would definitely be in history class every single day.
Yeah.
And I love how he has like a machine, and I like how Danny's like, "Just do it, just kill him already." And then he's just imagining in his head that Arnold is actually playing Hamlet. He goes, "To be or not to be, to be." And then he throws his skull.
Yeah, it's like Hamlet with machine guns, and it's ridiculous. But then again, it's setting up that Jack Slater is going to be moving in through different dimensions, you know, and the villain of the movie too is going to bring different characters through to the real world and things like that. So I think it works in a lot of different ways. It's funny, it's hilarious, but also kind of, it kind of primes you to be like, okay, Jack Slater, he's going to come into this Hamlet. What else is he going to come into later? Yeah.
Right. And then after that happens, now we see this other scene being played out, like you were mentioning before, where the mother is getting ready to go to work because she's a nurse, I believe. And then she's like, well, I got to go. Dinner, just going ahead. I left you some money and everything. Lock the door behind me. And by the way, I had to lie to your teacher to tell her that you were real because you were at the movies the whole time. And remember, she goes, and you're hanging around with that creepy guy. And she knows that she's interrogating him, but Danny does not know that he's being interrogated by his own mother by just luring him in. Because, and you hang around with that creepy old guy. Nick is not creepy. And yeah. Just, you see, I knew it. I knew you were at the movies the whole entire time, and you made me lie to your teachers.
Which, so, I don't know, like, as someone who, like, went to the movies a lot, and, you know, that was my safe space growing up, too, there's a lot worse things. This is what I always tell my parents. There are a lot worse places and things I could be doing rather than going to the movies a lot and seeing a lot of movies.
So, same here.
You should be happy that I chose to be addicted to movies and not, you know, drugs or hanging around the wrong crowd. And like I said, that first scene of danger where that guy, you know, when the mom leaves, we're at this scene now, and, you know, he comes to the apartment and ties him up and, you know, trying to rob him. And, you know, he gives Danny the chance to do something heroic. He turns his back. He's like, you know, I'll give you the chance. And he kind of freezes up. He's not an action hero. So again, priming you that this is the real world. You know, you can die, you know, you get stabbed, you could, and he's just a kid versus this, you know, like homeless druggy dude, whatever. and so the guy just leaves and
throws the key in the toilet and goes, I can get a
fish. Go fish.
You have a TV. He's like, you don't have shit. You have is a little TV. I can get a couple $100 for. Go fish.
Yeah.
And then the cops, this makes me laugh though. You would think that the cops would actually escort Danny home after all this happened.
That's because true.
In the interrogation thing, he goes, look, your mom's is working a late shift. I'm thinking to myself, your mother would have actually been in the interrogation room wondering what happened. But, you know,
I also was wondering why, like, you know, I'm not a parent, but like if something happened to my kid like that extreme, I'm leaving work. I don't care like where I work. I'm telling how strict my job is. My son was in danger. So, but she works her whole shift. Danny goes to the movies and, you know, the next time that she sees him is when, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but when he brings Jack Slater home with him. So you're assuming it's like at least like the middle of the night, the next day, you know, like it's
right.
So that was another thing that I kind of was like, not great parenting from the mom.
We'll get into that in a few minutes because I have some thoughts on that scene though, that just makes me laugh a little bit, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
But, so we wind up getting over. Nick receives the film for Jack Slater, for the latest in one of Danny's favorite film series, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger as a tutorial Los Angeles police detective and violent action hero, and offers to show Danny the private screening just before the world premiere. To mark the occasion, Nick tears up a special ticket that he received from Harry Houdini years ago, giving one half of the stub to Danny as a keepsake. And I like how this is actually being perceived, even though it could be come off a little bit of a creepy thing, because now Nick is actually in an old-fashioned 1920s, 30s kind of usher suit. And he's breaking it down. He's like, look, I remember when Houdini, and I like how he does like the little magic trick of the ticket. And Houdini himself gave me this ticket. And he said it will unlock the world of mysteries. And the ticket never worked for me, but it might work for you. And
well, he never tried, remember? He said right. He was scared to ever try it. So I feel like that was another scene I liked, because the scene before that is Danny being scared and afraid to stand up for himself with the robber. So again, they're kind of relating to each other in that way. And giving him this really priceless thing that he's been holding on to, I thought that was really sweet.
I do too. I thought that was really cool. Danny gets this large bucket of popcorn. He sits down. The movie starts. And I like how Nick goes, "You think he's going to die? Jack Slater never dies."
Unless the ratings go down.
Right.
The viewership. Yeah.
But yeah, as the film starts, Danny's unaware that the stub glows with magic when it's a stick of dynamite exits the film during a car chase scene and lands in the theater. Danny instructively ducks for cover. When he comes to, he finds that he is now in the film, right along with Slater, who is in disbelief as how Danny arrived. At the LAPD headquarters, Danny tries to explain how this is all a film and explaining who the bad guys are. So I like how basically Danny's just surprised at the fact that, number one, Slater is driving with no hands. He's shooting with the gun. He's hearing the hard rock music of AC/DC's Big Gun. And it's not connecting the dots yet or anything like that. It's kind of like just shell shock. And of course, you also were introduced to Vincent before that too, because Danny's still in the theater watching this scene being played out, watching the second cousin getting killed, which is Slater's second cousin getting killed. Big mistake. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it breaks into this whole entire car chase scene with Slater. And I remember watching that for the very first time. I love the AC/DC song. It still gets me pumped up even today. I had that in my Walkman. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that, of just, you know, just rocking out to AC/DC. And then the other thing that I really liked was when Danny's just all of a sudden just shell-shocked because of the fact he's even near Slater and he's not even connected to the dots until he says, "Wait, heavy metal music, no hands on the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in a movie. I'm in an action movie. I'm with Jack Slater." So what did you think of it?
Yeah, I think this is where the movie really could have made or broken it. You know, it was a make or break it scene. And I think it's really well done. You know, every kid wishes they could be a part of their favorite movie. And I think what he realizes pretty quickly is when we're in the movie theater, we're protected from gunfire and dynamite and stuff like that. And that it is all fake. But then he's in the back of the, convertible, like you said, and this in the middle of the shootout. And then I like that scene where you got the stereotype chief, who's yelling and breaking the glass. You got the steam coming out of his ears, just every action movie has that guy, it's such a, this time I'm getting your badge,
there's no second chances anymore, Slater. Yeah. This is it. You're done. I had enough of this and everything. And then Slater looks at Danny and goes, "My captain is really mad at me. I'm not going to be a cop anymore." He's just mad because you tore up more of half the city than usual.
And then
it was no big deal.
And then when the chief and Slater are they put the light on the kid. And they're interrogating him, there's no record of that name in New York, where are you from? And Danny has to outsmart them and just make shit up basically. And
and then he also winds up talking about their friendship,
mm-hmm.
and how they have that love and respect for each other between chief and police officer. And he's like, "Wait, how does he know about that? Nobody knows about that. You didn't tell anybody about that." He goes, "No, I didn't tell anybody about that."
Yeah. Yeah, he gets mad at him. Told you not to tell anybody about. But yeah, Danny's kind of proving that, maybe his what he's telling him is not so far-fetched. I mean, even you know, Charles Dance, who plays the villain, you know, he immediately buys that like Danny has some sort of power just by overhearing him talk about the scheme or whatever. He really buys into it really fast and is proven right. So you know, which could be like a nitpick or something like that, but I love Charles Dance in this movie as the villain with the glass eye and everything. I think he's always said, like, from Game of Thrones, if you're not familiar, he's just like he loves chewing on the scenes, and he just has such a large, you know, tall presence, you know, where you know he's the bad guy, even though like he's kind of the second in command. At the start of the movie, you know that he's like the one that's going to be more dangerous as the movie goes along.
Right. Yeah. Another thing too is, fun fact, they were actually going to cast Alan Rickman as that character, but they found out later on that Alan Rickman was a little too expensive, so they went with that actor. But what's funny is he actually wore a t-shirt on the set that says, "I am cheaper than Alan Rickman.
That's funny. I mean, it makes sense. This is directed by John McTiernan, who did Die Hard. They're definitely going for like the Hans Gruber template with that, you know, that suave businessman, European, well-dressed villain. So it makes sense. I think that's funny, but I think it worked out. I think Charles Dance is equally great.
I think so too.
And memorable as Hans Gruber and cheaper.
Yeah, definitely cheaper. But also too, I like how they have these other cameos though. You see the T-1000 from the Terminator. You see Danny DeVito as a cat animated animation.
Basic Instinct.
Yeah, Basic Instinct.
Yeah.
You see all these other little cameos, and Danny's just geeking out because there's no way. And I like how Slater's like, "What? What's the big deal? People do this all the time. They're just caught."
For the animated, where he's, you know, that's that part got me really bad. Like, where he's like, "There's an animated cat in the police station." He's like, I think the chief is like, "He's one of our best. What's your point?"
And then Slater's like, "And guess what? He's gonna do it again tomorrow."
Yeah. Oh man, that was so great. And yeah, it's like Danny trying to prove that like this world is fake. I love this whole section of the movie, you know, where he takes them to like basically Best Buy, even though they don't call it Best Buy.
It was actually Blockbuster.
Our block, yeah. What did I say?
Yeah, Best Buy. It was actually Blockbuster.
I just was at Best Buy, so it's on my mind. But yeah, cool. Blockbuster. And you know, he's like, "I'll show you your movies are gonna have to be here." And it's Sylvester Stallone in Terminator 2. I just love that. And even Slater's like, "That's one of his best performances."
"No, this was supposed to be you. Yeah. You were in this movie." And then I like how the girl looks at him and goes, "You were in a movie?" "Yeah, it's called My So-Called Life."
Yeah. Yeah, it's like all the girls are hot. Yeah, Danny pointing that out. There's not one unattractive girl. Like all this action movie stuff that we kind of take for granted. Jack's trying to point out, Danny's trying to point out, he's like, "You know, what's your phone number? Everyone starts with 555, you know, and just like trying to point out the ridiculousness of it. And you know, Jack's still in his own action movie world, and you know, thanks for getting her number, getting her to say her number in there.
Right.
You know, getting and the then also ladies too, and all the glory.
The police captain also makes Danny his partner, so now he's partnered up with a kid as well. But yeah, the whole scene of him trying to break it down is like trying to explain to him this was his movie, things like that with Stallone and the girls and stuff like that. And I just, like you said, this movie just basically shows you just how we as film fans appreciate the little small things like that, you know, and especially when Arnold goes, "Yeah, they live in different area codes." And
he's only like, "There's so many numbers, you know, there's only so many numbers you can have, and not everyone can start with 555.
Right.
But it's like, oh, this ridiculous stuff that's going to come into play later on too. That Danny's trying to, you know, he's trying to start small, that like the world is not as it seems. And I kind of like, you know, these type of movies as I was watching it. You know, you brought up The Matrix. That's one. I would say like The Truman Show. Free Guy is another, like a more recent one, but just like people that are in this fake world, and then like the wall gets broken and they start to realize that they're in a constructed, fictional, whatever you want to call it, world. I think that's a great setup for a movie. So
I think so yeah. too. It plays off the meta really well.
Yeah.
And I like how they try to convince a character or something that they're in a movie when they're not really in a movie. So it's kind of like a disbelief kind of feel to it.
Yeah. Cause if someone said that to you or me, you know, I would react the same way. Like, you're crazy, you know,
right.
Like, what are you talking about? Like,
I find it funny though, too, that it's actually Stallone that's in Terminator 2 because they had that little before in the 80s and 90s. Yeah.
It was a little jab, but you know, I also like that, you know, Schwarzenegger says that was one of his best roles. So it's like he's giving himself a compliment, but right. also being like, you know, in this fake world, Stallone also did really well as the robot in T2.
But yeah, Danny, and then also too at the police station. Remember the wife and everything is calling Arnold. He puts her on the speaker, and he has her on the recording thing too. I'm jumping back just a little bit, but I just like those little small things and stuff like that.
Find out later that's fake,
right?
And he pays someone to call, because you never hear the wife on the over the phone. I don't think. So yeah. Also, just another a lot of stuff again, like that comes back around. Even like we didn't mention the handcuff key that Danny gets from the toilet will come back later on. Shane Black worked on the script, so he's also like one of the premier action guys. You know, did Predator, Lethal Weapon. So I thought, you know, that was a nice touch. You know, all these little things. He's really good at that.
Most definitely, and then this is also Stanley Kubrick's favorite movie, though too.
Favorite movie ever?
Yeah, of all time.
Oh shit, that's crazy. Yeah, I know he did have some you know, weird taste, but yeah, that's wow.
Right.
Best movie, favorite movie ever. That's a big one,
right? Especially for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But we love it, but still. But yeah, like we said, Danny tries to explain how this is all a film and explaining who the bad guys are, but Slater does not accept this, despite Slater's supervisor, Lieutenant Decker, assigns Danny to work with Slater, given his apparent knowledge of the villain. Danny leads Slater to the home of the mob boss, Tony Vivaldi, I think that's how you say it. I'm sorry if I'm butchering it, which he saw in the opening of the film. But Danny denies any wrongdoing, and Slater is unable to arrest him despite Danny's assurance of the crime. And I like how they pull over to the house,
mm-hmm.
and Danny just points his finger at the house. He goes, "The bad guys are in there." He goes, mm-hmm. "All this years of police work at the academy,
yeah,
and you did it. You finally did it. All I had to do was park my car right here, point my finger and say the bad guys are right here." And then also like how Benedict answers the door,
mm-hmm.
and he goes, "Yeah, I'm here to talk to the drug dealer of the house."
Yeah, well, it's the guy that right. looks like it's like the butler first.
Yeah,
he looks like the odd job from James
Bond.
Yeah, and so I like that, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm looking for the drug dealer of the house." Then he goes, gets Benedict. And he mentions his glass eye, you know, and then he asks to see his eye and he kind of fights back. But then at the end, he gives him the have a nice day and his eye is a smiley face, which is just so ridiculous. But again, at that moment, you know, he's kind of being like, how did he know that this kid knew about the glass eye? And then when they're walking away, Danny is talking more about the villain's plans, and Benedict overhears them. And that's kind of what gets his journey in the movie started, of being like, okay, how does this kid know all this? You know, Sherlock Holmes said that if you've gone through all the possibilities, and you know, some maybe the most illogical answer is the right one, you know, something. I know I'm paraphrasing that, but
right.
Yeah,
but also like how he calls Danny Toto as well.
Yeah, he's referencing like Wizard of Oz, which I feel like is another, you can't talk about movies that take place in fictional worlds without, you know, Wizard of Oz started it all, pretty much.
Right.
That's like the original.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then after that winds up happening, as they depart, Vidi's assassin, Mr. Benedict, overhears Danny talking about the ticket stub and distinctly follows the two that night. Benedict orders an attack on Slater's home while he's introducing Danny to his daughter, Whitney. While Slater and Whitney fend off the attackers, Benedict is able to steal the ticket stub from Danny. But I like how they go into his apartment, and then, like you mentioned before, though, where basically he has all the same clothes and everything too. The red shirt.
He has like 50 pairs of the red shirt, 50 pairs of the same jeans. Yeah.
And then there's also some guy hiding like a tackle force team in the closet. He goes, "Wait, did you know there's a dead body in there?" He goes, "Yeah, he's there all the time.
Like, there's always a guy in there."
Yeah. And then he breaks it down to him, like you said, though, Cisco, where he's like, "Look, all this is fake, where I have to get someone to call in to make it look like that I'm actually in a good relationship with my wife and work things out. And, you know, she's actually happily married now when there's nothing that I can do about it." Mm-hmm. And so I like how they give that little bit of a nod to the other Jack Slater film that Danny watched before and now introduced us into this one. So, like you said, it gives him more layers, and we actually care about Slater even more. Just as we would actually care about Slater even more if we were watching this Jack Slater movie as well.
Yeah, I do like that scene. I would say one part that I feel like could have been improved is, like you mentioned, that they meet the daughter for the first time, Whitney, and she has like a scene where she, you know, is kicking the guy's ass and like doing all these kind of screams, like acting like she's the one getting beaten up. But then it kind of, after that, she kind of disappears from the movie. And I, you know, that she was a really good actress in the 90s, you know, and from Billy Madison, Mortal Kombat, you know, and so I thought that she would at least come back later on in the film. And the only time she does is to give him an extra pair of clothes. And
right.
I thought they could have fit her in maybe just one more scene or something, you know, to help them out or, you know, but that was like one thing that thought could have been improved. But the main relationship is him trying to get over his son that got killed on the rooftop. And I think they do resolve that at the end, at least. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. And then, you know, Slater's daughter has that huge truck and things like that too. Yeah, and
that's true. That part is funny.
Yeah, Danny goes, "Whose truck is that?" "Oh, that's my daughter's."
Yeah. Yeah, all the driving here I really like too, and that mm-hmm. was kind of, I thought, like a nod to just any driving video game that you can play. I just love that you can run over anything without consequences. Even in like Grand Theft Auto and stuff, like police can come after you, but I feel like, you know, I don't know if you've seen those memes of like people that play GTA and stop at the red lights. It's like you're just missing the whole point of the game. I feel like those people are psychotic. Like there's something wrong. I follow the law, like the driving laws in real life. So when I mm-hmm. play a video game, I'm not doing that.
No, I'm doing the exact opposite of that. Yeah. There's no way that would be a boring video game. And I'm sure if they did something like that in the movie and everything, it'd be just as boring.
They keep that joke up the whole movie. I love mm-hmm. it. Like even me like too. Later on, you see when they're driving, there's like cars behind them that are like crashing, and like you know, like he's ruining all the shit from his driving, and they never really comment on it. You're just like, this is the world.
Casual driving.
This is the world. He can drive however he wants. He can play chicken, and he's always gonna survive because he's the star.
Exactly. And yeah. Like you said, though, I definitely like how it makes it look like a non-playable character
mm-hmm.
basically in the background. And he gets to drive, like you said, he gets to drive anywhere he wants to. It doesn't matter. He gets to make up his own rules on how things go. And I definitely like it about that. And he knows this world inside and out, you know, because this is actually the world he knows. But to Danny, it's new. And mm-hmm. it's something totally geeked out.
But he knows the rules, at least. He's like, Danny's the smart one. And it is like Terminator 2 a lot in that way, where Is it T-800? Is that the in Terminator 2, the T-800? That's Arnold?
Yeah, that's Arnold.
Yeah, like he has to teach him how to act in society. You know, you can't kill people. People don't talk like that. Like, he's teaching him to act like a human. And I think there's some of that going on here where Danny's like, you're in an action movie. This is what happens, and teaching. And then when they get to the real world, you know,
he has to teach them
how to be in the real world too. Yeah. So I like right. that.
But yeah, from the attack, Slater learns that Benetti's plot to kill naval mob boss family at a rooftop funeral service using nerve gas. And he and Danny are able to foil the attack. Whitney helps to drive them to Vendelli's home, but they arrive just after Benedict has killed Vendelli and used the ticket stub to create a portal to the real world. But I like the whole entire thing where you have the guy who killed Mozart as the
actor. Murray Abraham. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And yeah, from Amadeus, like, which is that's not a Stanley Kubrick movie, is it?
I don't remember.
I'll look that up. But yeah, I just like that. And when he captures him and he's like, that's the guy that killed Mozart. And he's like, I've killed a lot of people, kid. Like, I don't remember. I don't remember if I've killed a guy named Mozart. I don't think it is Stanley Kubrick. Yeah, it's not Milos Forman.
I also like how Arnold's like, what are we doing back here? There's nothing. There's no side porch or anything at this hotel or anything. And he goes, Danny told me not to get involved with you. Told me not to trust you.
And then Danny warned him. This guy is right. he's gonna turn on you, and that's always the thing. And there's always one guy in the force that's evil, that's working for the bad guys. So
right. But what did you think of the fact that this guy was named after a fart?
Oh, I like the humor in this, honestly. Like, I can see that, you know, some people might lose them, like this part with the whole fart and then, you know, the gas, you know, being actual deadly gas coming from this guy. I like it. I like spoof movies like Scary Movie and Airplane and all those dumb, you know, Hot Shots 1 and 2. So I kind of was just thinking of those movies. And so even though the plot is ridiculous, isn't any more ridiculous than some of these action movies like Fast and Furious? Like,
right.
The plots are really stupid sometimes in these action movies. So I went with it. I thought it was cool. The fact that it's like on a rooftop and there's a lot of actually like cool stunt work going on, like with the crane, you know, having to escape on the crane and get this guy off by using the crane and all that stuff. I just think it's a good action scene, even without the comedy and the fart gas or whatever. So it worked for me. I don't know. What about you?
Me too, because it's a typical Italian thing. But when the Italian guy goes over to the mobster that they killed, and to basically just, you know, pay their respects. And then you see this scene being played out where Arnold is trying to cause a diversion to where he can get everybody away from the bomb. Mm-hmm. So Arnold winds up going over to the casket and he goes, this guy's not dead. Yeah. And throws him on the crane. And Arnold's actually holding on to this dead guy, this corpse, on a crane, because of the fact that whenever he was on the elevator and everything too, there was a helicopter circling the whole entire premise. Yep. And also a helicopter shooting him, mm-hmm. shooting at him and everything too. And next thing you know, he winds up hopping off the elevator and grabbing onto where the crane is because of the fact that the dead body is attached to the crane. Picked up the dead body. I just thought it was hilarious, and
it's ridiculous, but like, yeah, it works. Like, you know, another like funny gun reveals, like every person at the funeral is like packing. I thought that was really funny. Like, and then Arnold is like, you know, calling for a doctor, and then the doctor is there and he ends up knocking the doctor out with the corpse. So it's just a lot of funny beats in it. But yeah, culminates with the crane, and then they land in this like tar pit, and that's when
dinosaurs.
The that's when we get the scene where the daughter comes in with the monster truck, basically, and gives him his extra pair of clothes, you know. And then I like Danny's line where he's like, usually tar sticks to people, you know, right. Like, again,
it looks like mud. It looks like oil or something. It looks like something that is not even mud at all.
Like, you, like, again, you wouldn't survive. A regular person probably wouldn't survive being in that situation, but this is an action movie. So, of course, he gets a clean pair of clothes. Why? How did she know that he would need it? You know, it's just a lot of stuff in action movies you just kind of ignore, like, the logic sometimes.
Right, because even Danny goes, don't you find this a little convenient? He goes, hey, kid, didn't you just say that we're in an action movie?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So this is basically like us in a movie theater, and we're questioning things in our head, but like, wait, he would not have survived that, like you said, Cisco. Mm. And then somebody has to say, look, and you just, aren't we watching an action movie? Yeah, okay, well, okay.
It's one of the things I liked about the not Fast X, which I haven't seen, but Fast and Furious 9, where Tyrese and Ludacris start questioning how they survive everything. Yep. And it's like, any regular person would ask those type of questions, you know, why do we keep surviving this crazy stuff? And same thing with like the Die Hard sequels. Well, I don't think they're as good as the first one. No. It's like, he's just a regular guy. He's not a superhero. So you're in these ridiculous over the top situations at some point. You know, you would ask yourself, why do I keep surviving? And then, you know, us as an audience have to wonder, like, is this really, you know, possible that someone could survive this? I will say the John Wick franchise does an amazing job of keeping it up.
I love the John Wick franchise.
But when it's a regular guy like John McClane in Die Hard, I have a little harder time buying that. So,
right.
Yeah. And Fast and Furious.
But also too, like, we were talking about the whole entire scene where the daughter and all, they go into their house and they steal Danny's ticket and stuff like that. Mm. But we forgot to mention the fact that the house winds up exploding because of Benedict's eye.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cop decided to go on ahead and take the eye, and then and winds up saying, vengeance is mine. And then next thing you know, the police captain is just over there yelling at them again. It's the same bit again.
Yeah.
And then
you see like all the windows like progressively keep, like his office just gets worse and worse every time they come back to it. It's really funny.
But I definitely like how Benedict is over there looking at the ticket, seeing what he collected from Danny. And he's over there and he winds up going to the wall, and he's just over there just for leverage. And next thing you know, he realizes he's not even holding on to anything.
Well, and then I like that, you know, they play the Twilight Zone theme, and, you know, with, you know, Rod Serling saying like, you know, going into another dimension, you know, on the TV. And so it kind of like puts it in his mind too, that like, oh, this is what's going on here. And he starts putting the pieces together. Again,
I like the third wall break too.
Yeah. I forgot it. That scene is really great. Yeah. It's like he's starting to figure out that he's also in an action movie. But yeah, like that fourth wall break. Yeah. I think that scene is awesome. And you need someone like Charles Dance to really deliver something like that without it feeling corny or, you know, cheesy.
And I like Alan Rickman, but I think Alan would have actually done it a little more seriously, to the point where it's like, mm-hmm. It's not believable enough for it to be an action movie. He would actually really think that this is the way he would talk to an audience. I don't think it would actually play off the same way.
I think too that he's just, Hans Gruber is just too iconic. Like, right. I like that the only iconic action person in this movie is Arnold.
Me too.
And everyone else is kind of like
secondary in a sense.
Yeah. People you've seen in other things before, maybe, but like not really, you know, taking away your attention. It's all Arnold and this kid. I think that was smart, even though like they tried to get Rickman. I think it worked out.
But yeah, they lose track of Benedict quickly, and Slater becomes disheartened by the reality of this New York City. Danny introduces Slater to his mother, and from her, Slater comes to appreciate the harsh reality instead of the glamorized world that he lives in. bowing to take a softer stance, they learn that Benedict believes he can kill Slater in this world by killing Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm.
So I like how, like you said, we were playing off with the rules and stuff like that. And I like how Arnold winds up breaking a window to a car. Mm-hmm. And he winds up going, that really hurt. He goes,
yeah.
Look, Jack, the rules are different here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can get killed here. This is not the movies anymore. This is reality. Yep. And I like how we go from a bright and shiny background in Los Angeles in the movie world. And then we go to this dark and grim place of New York City, and it's raining and has a very apocalyptic kind of feel to it that mm-hmm. Arnold's not even used to it either. And it also makes us feel like, as audience goers too, when we're exiting a theater, when we're on this bright and shiny thing that we just got done seeing, and all of a sudden now it's raining outside.
Yeah.
And our eyes are actually being readjusted, just how his eyes are being readjusted with the blinders taking off, in a sense.
Yeah, we forgot to mention, but again, just another thing that keeps recurring throughout the movie is like chicken, like the cars mm-hmm. running into each other and playing chicken. And like, that's one of Slater's moves. And so Danny tries it when they're in the action movie world. And he's, you know, saying like, it's an action movie, I can't die. And then like at the last second, he's like, oh, wait, I'm the comic relief. No,
I'm just a sidekick.
Yeah, I'm just a sidekick. And like he quickly gets out of the way. And he does it on a bicycle. And then Slater does it when they get to New York in the real world. And he just straight up full on crashes head on collision. And I like that they never show it, but every time that they're getting close to Benedict, he's using the ticket to escape, you know, so
every
like in that head-on collision, you would think like, oh, they're, you know, he's dead or whatever, but nope, last second he escaped. They have to find another way to get him. I think, you know, again, it's a small thing. They don't show it, but it shows just how difficult it's going to be for Slater to beat this guy, because this isn't how he's used to fighting.
Right, because like you said, killers and murderers get away with murder all the time. You're not going to get your killer within an hour of a movie of a movie or anything. This is real life. You actually have to sit down and do police work.
I love like how Benedict finds that out. You know, he just shoots somebody and he's, hey, I shot somebody, anybody? And, you know, you hear the guy in the apartment, keep it down there. Yeah.
I just shot a man in the head.
And it's realistic. I mean, that's depending on where you are, you're not always going to get a good response, a quick response from the police or anybody. And I also like the flip side of that, where Arnold and the mom are kind of hitting it off, Danny's mom, and she's playing Mozart. And, you know, he's like, loves it. He's like, oh man, I've never heard this before. And, you know, Mozart, isn't that the guy that you said he killed? Like, again, everything in the script, even the jokes have like callbacks. Like, I think it's so, such a good script, such a tight script that they have all these jokes that if you're paying attention, most of them worked for me.
Me too. So, and then, like we were talking about with the Mozart, with the classical music and everything too, it's something new to him because he's always listening to heavy metal rock music and things like that too. So now he's into classical music because of his mom, because of Danny's mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how they wake, he wakes up the next day and it's like completely opposite of who Jack is.
Mm-hmm.
As Danny's mom.
Yeah, Danny's like, you've gone soft. Oh. Like you've gone.
What you do to him, mom? You broke him. And then how much do you want to bet that she probably got some of Slater that night, though, too? Like, the way
they were getting a little close. You know, I like, too, that they try to say, like, this is Arnold, you know, at first. And then he just tells the truth, like, no, I'm Slater. I'm, you know, I just look like Arnold. And she's like, yeah, you do kind of look like him. Like, they just kind of play it off in that way, you know. The exact perfect replica of Arnold, but I think that happens a lot more than you think, where celebrities get mistaken for other celebrities all the time, you know. So I think that's possible.
I see that though too, because there are celebrity lookalikes and stuff like that. And you know, someone's like, are you who You say you are, and
I just saw there was a celebrity roundtable, actors roundtable, and Paul Giamatti. Well, the guy asked, "Who do you get mistaken for?" And Paul Giamatti said that he gets mistaken for Larry the Cable Guy all the time, which I don't see at all.
Me either. Like, that's like the exact opposite.
But he said he's gotten that like 5 times. So it's like, yeah, it's, you know, that could be another nitpick you could say in this movie. But I think I buy that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily believe that it's Arnold right away.
Right.
If you saw him in real life, probably.
Exactly. And then, you know, and then of course you have this whole entire idea of Benedict going, well, if I kill Arnold, there's no one more Jack Slater. And I thought to myself, well, technically you could still have a Jack Slater. It just wouldn't be played by Arnold.
Yeah, true.
So yeah,
a lot of the action franchises, that's what happens in the sequels too.
Right.
They just recast the main actor. Again, could be reading into it, but
you know what though? I love how Benedict just breaks it down and thinks, okay, if I kill him, no more Slater. I win. I can take over New York and live my life happy. And all this fictional world that I once was part of is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, I get to live my life.
I guess this was, we have to put this in context with the time too, that like a lot of the franchises like would not, at the time, wouldn't really get made, at least like ones that would go in the theater. Like Die Hard movies had to have Bruce Willis in it. Terminator movies had to have Arnold in it. You know, so like maybe that's kind of what the logic was at the time, that like if he thought that he killed Arnold, there would be no more Jack Slater movies because they would kill it would kill the franchise. Nowadays, it's kind of harder. Like there have been Terminator movies since then without Arnold and stuff like that. But most movies back then, I feel like they really depended on having the star in it. Yeah.
Right. Because basically that would be the face of the franchise. And if you got rid of him, that would be it.
Exactly.
So I know that we talked about celebrity lookalikes and stuff like that. Now at this red carpet premiere, you got to see the fact that Benedict actually brought back the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
You see the original
from,
actor,
the Seventh Seal. Yeah.
Right. And then you actually see the actor who played the Ripper come in as well. And then you also see
Ian McKellen. It's Ian McKellen.
Right.
Yeah,
playing. Yeah, he gets the Ian McKellen, and everybody's like looking at him like, didn't I just see you walk in?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's, and this could easily be a cosplay because there was really hardly any cosplaying going on in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Like, never mind. I'm getting confused. You're talking about Tom Noonan playing. I was thinking of the Grim Reaper or whatever.
No, not the Grim Reaper. Yeah. My bad, man.
Yeah,
the Ripper.
Tom Noonan. He's the villain in Manhunter.
Yeah.
The original Manhunter. And yeah, so you see the actor playing the Ripper guy, and then you also get the Ripper that's come from the Slater movie. Yeah. I thought that was really, really well done and clever. And then you got like the Asian guy freaking out, like, why are you dressed in makeup? You know, like Jack Nicholson doesn't dress like the Joker at the Batman premiere.
Right? Because, yeah, that's actually the dude from Blank Check, the limo driver.
Because
why the hell? Yeah, he's like, why the hell are you dressed like the Ripper? Look, nobody does this, okay? Look, I'm going to get you a tux. You're going to be fine and everything. This is supposed to be maybe a publicist or something. This is going to be fine. You're going to be fine. I'm going to take care of you. Next thing you know, Ripper winds up killing him.
And I love the Ripper's axe, too. Like, I think it's a really cool, like he puts it together. You see him putting it together,
it's like,
and assembling
such heavy metal,
be honest with you. It at least in the Blu-ray, it did look kind of like foam posit, you know, like it didn't look metal, but they have the sound effects that kind of sell it, that it's like this heavy, right. Like shing.
I don't know, like I'll be honest with you, with the 4K, it actually looked like it was shined and polished to the point where it was believable, but it just goes to show you the difference between 4K and Blu-ray with the lighting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right. But then you have Arnold talking about Planet Hollywood. Him talking
about his wife at the time.
Yeah, Maria Shriver's in the background, and she's just basically just like, okay, Arnold, give it a rest.
And I think that's fun. You know, like,
right.
I think that's the difference between Arnold and a lot of other guys, is they wouldn't have the skin to make fun of themselves. I mean, he even jokes about like Congress and like
right.
government a couple times, you know, knowing that I think this was before he was governor of California, yeah. but like he was getting, you know, Maria Shriver was involved in politics. And so he was kind of getting in that circle at the time. So I think that's aged really well, too, because, again, then he became governor and he's poking fun at, you know, that's those kind of circles, and then poking fun of Planet Hollywood. You know, she's like, don't mention the restaurant. And then like as soon as he gets the opportunity, he's like, yeah, we got really good stuff at Planet Hollywood. You should check it out.
And then he's like, look, I'm going to start in this new movie. It's going to star me. I'm going to produce it. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Really funny.
And then you have Jack Slater coming in right behind him as well. And one of the reporters goes, how did you change your clothes so fast? Where do I sit?
Yeah. You got Danny getting involved. I like every time that he tells Danny, don't do anything, just stay right there. Danny, of course, has to help. And if Danny didn't help, you know, honestly, he probably wouldn't have made it out, because he's the one that points out that the Ripper's on the top balcony about to kill Arnold. So,
right. Yeah. And then, of course, Arnold winds up whipping out the gun. And then I love this stunt scene. The stunt scene of Ripper hurrying up off the balcony, jumping off the balcony, and then taking the axe and just gliding down the curtain was just awesome. I love that scene so much. And then you see Arnold go, wow, you look like you're the best celebrity lookalike I ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was pretty well done, too, the two Arnolds together.
Right.
I thought that was pretty impressive.
Who's your agent?
VFX for 90s, for 93. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Then after that, you have, of course, finally, we actually have the confrontation on the rooftop where, once again, Jack is face-to-face with the Ripper. Ripper winds up trying to holding Danny hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he's unloading the gun, unloading everything again. And then Ripper winds up saying, we did this before. We did this cat and mouse game before.
Yeah.
And big so, mistake. Yeah.
I love his catchphrase. We didn't mention, too, the I'll be back one, where he's like, you know, and he's like, do I say that? And he's like, yeah, it's kind of your thing. You say that all the time. Movies actually like try and work it in.
Right.
Again, Arnold making fun of himself and his catchphrases.
He says something else like baby Bobby slippers or something like that too.
Yeah.
And then he tries to get Arnold to cuss. He goes, I cannot say that. He goes, that's because it's a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I definitely love the little nods to that. And then of course, you know, Ripper winds up getting electrocuted by Slater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that scene too. I think it's well shot. Danny is hanging onto like the gargoyle on the side of the building, and Jack has to save him from there. A lot of like high wire, you know, stunt work in this movie.
And him with the cowboy boots on that gargoyle while he's trying to save Danny. He said, "Please God, don't let me let him fall." But I like this redemption story for Jack, though, because now it's like him trying to save his own son, which now Jack sees him as his son. And this whole entire PTSD moment of the flashback of the Ripper taking his son's life and everything, I thought they did a really good job with that. Then, of course, then after that happens, we see Benedict now, and he goes, well, do you want to date with Dracula? Well, I can get him. What about Nightmare on Elm Street with Freddy Krueger? I can get him too. And he's just naming off all these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Part of me as a kid, I wanted to see him bring in Dracula just to see what would happen with that.
I think part of it probably is like the rights. You know, you need the rights to show certain monsters. So I think this is a Sony movie. So I'm not sure. Yeah. Like what they had the rights to. I mean, but we said they show the Grim Reaper from the Seventh Seal, the old like Bergman movie played by Ian McKellen, which I think was a nice touch too, because you know you think, oh man, this is it. You know, Slater gets shot in the chest. No bulletproof vest this time. It's going to be over for him. And then Danny has to like get over his fears and become the hero. Basically, he has to save the day, get him to the movie theater, and try and figure something out. So,
right. Because yeah. Remember also too, Arnold winds up shooting Benedict in the eye. He explodes. Right.
Yeah.
The ticket goes falling down on the ground. Then Ian McKellen comes
and
out.
They both survive that, you know, which is right. Kind of like they're in the real world now, so they probably wouldn't, but this is still an action movie for us, you know, so whatever.
Exactly. And then the ticket falls down, and then, of course, Ian McKellen comes out as the Grim Reaper. People are screaming, of course. And then I like how he touches one of the cops that's eating a hot dog.
And he just dies immediately.
Then he sees the ambulance drive by him because, remember, Danny winds up holding the ambulance hostage.
Oh, yeah. And again, like, a lot of gun work with a kid, which you don't normally see. Yeah.
And he's like, look, take him to the movies now.
And they all just leave. Like, they don't, even the driver, he has to drive himself. It's like, you know how to drive? He's like, yeah, from watching you.
Right. He takes him over. He doesn't even pull over. He just bangs into the movie theater, tells Nick to roll the film. Of course, it's not digitalized. It's on the regular 7mm film. Right. Yeah. And so he starts it up. And it has that Terminator moment, like you mentioned before within this movie itself, where he's like, look, Danny, I got to go back. I got to go to my real world. Yeah. Because, but I need you. Just still see me. I'll just be in the movies.
Yeah.
And that just was a heartfelt moment for me, you know, because it would be like, I don't want to see my hero go away, but I know he has to go because that's the only way for him to survive.
But then also, you know, if you want, like Arnold is older now and he's not like this, you know, Terminator shape, but we can always go back and watch Last Action Hero or Terminator and Terminator 2 and just have them in this moment of time. Like, I think, like you said, I think it's a beautiful moment and why kind of an argument for why movies are so important to us, even like when we're kids and just throughout our lives, like when times get hard or, you know, stuff like that, you can always just fall back on the movies that make you feel good.
Exactly. And then, I like also too when he goes, look, I wouldn't even call this a flesh wound. Talking about the doctor is in the real world and in the back in the movie world. He goes, come on, get him to the hospital. Next thing you know, he comes in the next scene and he winds up punching the glass to the lieutenant's office. He goes, it's working again.
Yeah.
So, and then next thing you know, both of them are screaming. The captain's over there screaming at each other. He goes, why are you screaming? He goes, did you know that this is written down? This is all
an action
Hollywood movie.
Yeah. This is... so I honestly, I think, you know, they did, I know we're wrapping up here. They did a lot of Terminator sequels with Arnold coming back. Some more successful than others, I would say. I would love to see a sequel to this.
Me too.
I think this is like so ripe for a sequel, like Jack Slater being an older Jack Slater, and you could bring in like, you know, another kid or something like that, and you could talk about like, you know, aging action stars
and have Danny, older Danny, back inside the movie
right
again, but this time it's basically Arnold not remembering who Danny is, but Danny remembering who he is.
And I know it's probably too late now, you know, just he doesn't really act that much anymore, but no. I was just thinking about that. Like,
it'd be cool.
I don't know why they never made a sequel to this, but I think
because I think it's because of the fact that they didn't do well financially to the point where it didn't.
That's what I think too. But yeah, I just think where Terminator gets messed up is the timeline stuff, because like every movie they wrap it up and it's like the timeline is reset, and then the next movie they're like, we're gonna go back and mess up the timeline again, and it's like right. It just doesn't make any sense. So but in this it's there is no timeline, it's just a movie.
Exactly.
You're just taking someone from a movie and putting it out in the real world, so you don't have to worry about any of that garbage.
Right. You know, so. And you know what, though? If this was a sequel, I would love to see Arnold going, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, you can like have all Glover. You can have all that stuff. I mean, right. Oh man, that was one of the lines that cracked me up. We didn't mention too was Danny calls when the explosion at the house, but when Benedict explodes the house and the two cops die, and then Danny's like, both cops dead, you know, but Slater survives, and then
he's
smoking
a cigar,
and the cop in the tree is like, I only had 2 days left until my retirement. I'm like, dude, that is, oh man, like you could have a lot of those.
It's so perfect.
I think that would be the sequel is Slater's about to retire. I think that would be an awesome sequel.
Tony Pitchers, you know where to find us. Email me at movielovesunite@gmail.com. 50-50 for Cisco and I.
Just give me some residuals. That's all I care about. If you do move on with it.
Right. But dude, this has been a pleasure to be able to do this review with you. I want to have you back on here again. I promise you it's not going to be as long as before because I know it's been a couple of years.
Right.
I've been just busy with life and everything now too. So I just want to say it's always a pleasure to have you on here.
Same. Yeah. It's, I'm glad we could do it now. It's, I'm going back to work too next week. So it's I'm going to be busy too coming up, but yeah, I'm so glad we got to talk about Arnold, and you know, this movie turned 30 last year,
right?
So I think it's a perfect time to kind of reevaluate it, and more people need to see it. So I think so. Yeah,
and also too, I had the action figures of Last Action Hero.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah, they actually had the car itself. I actually had Jack Slater's car. And there's actually a button to where you can actually eject the characters out of the car. So
that's so awesome. Yeah,
it really was. And the only thing I didn't have was the Benedict action figure, which was like the hardest action figure you can get. And I could not find that thing anywhere. But yeah
his gun was pretty sweet too. Like I liked, we didn't talk about that, but just the size of the guns were just massive.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the Joker gun from the 89 Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty long too.
But yeah.
Great movie. All right.
Definitely. So, guys, that's going to be it as far as the show goes. Always until next time, guys. Have a great and safe night, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.